All right, so we're going over chapter one from the Nutrition Fourth Edition book by Mr. Paul Insel. This book is directly related to NASM's Fitness Nutrition Specialist certification, and we're starting over on literally page one and into page two with the in chapter one. Okay, so just to kind of intro you guys on nutrition, when we think about nutrition, there's a lot of factors that are going to come into what influences us to eat. Do we agree? Mm-hmm. Okay. What's the simplest thing that influences us to eat?
Hunger.
Hunger. Yeah. Okay, hunger. We need to eat to survive, period. So there is nutrition on a survival sort of standpoint. And what you eat on a survival standpoint might be different from what you can choose to eat at the nicest restaurant in America or something, right? It's like we're surviving somewhere in nature. We probably aren't going to be eating a filet mignon cooked to our liking with a garlic butter spread and some sort of aioli, right? It's going to be a little bit more picky choosy, right? Okay. So this whole book, or chapter one, really starts off by talking about why do we eat the way that we eat, or why do we eat the way that we do. And it's important to understand the factors that affect our food choices. So looking actually at top right of page 3, you're going to see figure 1.2, factors that affect food choices. Notice there's about 30 or 20 or so things that are going to influence our food choices. Okay, so let's talk about some of those. Let's start with environmental. Okay, so I want you guys to talk to me about the environmental. Well, actually, let's go over all of them first. So we have environmental. As far as environmental goes, what do you think they're referring to? What environmental factors affect the way that we eat food?
What you're exposed to, I guess, like regionally. Like if you live on an island, you can have more, I guess.
Good.
Fish type diet.
So environmental wise, you know, if you're living in the Arctic, that's going to be a different environment than it is if you live by the equator. Do we agree? Different foods are going to be available to you. Environment can also be as simple as I live in, the southern United States compared to I live in California. There's a different environment there that might affect food choices. So what effects might be present with an economic influence on food?
What you can buy as far as what you can afford.
What can you afford? Do you think that affects food choices?
Yeah. 100%.
Okay. Is it pretty common that food that is not too healthy is pretty cheap in price?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Kind of maybe fast food-esque or food from a box. Typically, you know, like a Pop-Tart, okay? A few cents to make a Pop-Tart. Is it really cheap, but it's going to fill you up, okay? When someone that comes from a... family that might not be as well off economically... I was like, that took me a second to say that. I was like, how do I say that correctly? when you come from a poor-ass family, no. when you're a broken-ass family, your food choices are going to be based on, first off, maybe the number of people in your family. Okay, if it's just you, mom, and dad, that your budget for food, and it is $100, we'll say, for the week, you're going to be able to buy a little bit maybe better stuff as opposed to a family of six or five with the same budget, right? Okay, so when mom's going to the grocery store, she's budgeting in her mind, okay, I can only spend $100, but I have to feed all these people. I'm probably not going to choose the best sort of quality foods, right? Okay, so it might be affected by the total number of people in your family. Definitely affected by the family income. Okay, is it safe to say, though, that people that don't have money can't eat healthy? What do you guys think? Can people with less money or very little money still eat healthy?
Yeah.
They can. Okay. You just have to maybe know what is healthy in order to make that sort of food choice. Because when we think about the politics of, and even economics, of health, it's pretty common to assume that the poorer areas will have more obese people. Has anybody ever heard of those studies that show that people from the worst neighborhoods might have a higher rate of obesity? Okay. When we have to ask ourselves, is that going to be due to the fact that they can't afford high-quality food and that's why they're overweight? Or is it due to the total education in that area and making better food choices? What do you guys think? Is it going to be more education-based, or is...
They both play a part.
Yeah.
They both do play a part, for sure. But go for it.
I think it'll be more education-based.
Yeah.
But like I said, if you guys say that someone that doesn't make a lot of money can still eat healthy, it might be more education-based, right? Okay. So, when thinking about assisting people in nutrition, it doesn't really matter how much money they have. If they can eat the correct thing regardless of budget, or even just optimizing that sort of budget, they're going to be healthier, right? Okay. Would we agree that a piece of chicken breast is probably healthier than a box of cereal?
Yeah.
Captain Crunch or something. Okay. But you look at that box of cereal versus that chicken breast, and you can get a chicken breast for maybe about $2 to $3 a pound, and that can feed you for, we'll say, yeah, 1 pound of chicken might be able to feed you for a day. And that box of Captain Crunch might be able to feed you for maybe a day and a half. But that box of Captain Crunch is probably about $5, right? when we think about the price per calorie or price per quantity of food, most people will think, I just want to get some of the foods that are going to fill my family up and get them total amount of calories that they need per day. But when you can make the healthier option for the same price or even less, that comes down to an educational standpoint. Do we understand? Meaning they don't recognize that, they don't recognize that potentially the chicken breast might be just as filling or just as much food as a box of cereal, and it's even less expensive. Okay, would some eggs and chicken breast in the morning, like chopped up and made, be a pretty healthy option?
Yeah,
maybe a little egg scramble with some chicken breast. Okay, even if it's just a little bit of chicken breast, as opposed to a bowl of Captain Crunch or whatnot, might be almost the exact same price to feed a kid or to feed anyone. Because you have to buy the milk, and then you have to buy the cereal. And which one's going to be more nutrient-dense in the sense of vitamins, minerals, and actually the healthier option? Maybe some eggs and chicken breast. Okay, so when it comes down to that sort of environmental, economic, maybe even lifestyle sort of thought, educating someone on proper nutrition choices can be very, very important. Do we agree?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what about cultural beliefs and traditions? Is that going to affect food?
Yeah.
Okay, how is cultural beliefs or any cultural related practices going to affect food choice? Give me an example. Okay, so religion, I think that's going to be even the next one. Yeah, but what about cultural? Before we get to religion, cultural, what think of cultural foods. Okay, and that's closely related to religion. What about more, a little bit more cultural? What do they eat in what do they eat in Italy compared to, we'll say, the UK?
High grain, just very...
So they might eat more of a Mediterranean diet because that's what they have, we'll say, created over thousands of years eating in Italy.
Rice,
maybe
like
pasta-based. Yeah, okay. And in the UK... It's an island, typically high in... What do they typically eat a lot of over in the UK?
Potatoes?
Oh, yeah, I mean, they definitely do eat potatoes. Fish and chips, literally, yeah, fish and chips. Potatoes and fish, and that's because it's an island. it's a very North Atlantic cold island, but it's got a ton of fish, and potatoes can grow in that sort of environment. As opposed to where you get into Italy and you have a lot more, or easier to grow lots of different variety of foods, and grain is very omnipresent in their diets in the sense of pasta and breads and things of that nature. Okay. What other cultural sort of factors might there be?
In Mexico, they eat a lot of tortillas.
Yeah, okay, so Mexico, they do eat a lot of tortillas, or Mexican food, right? Is Mexican a culture, or is it a religion?
Culture.
Or nationality, you could say. But yeah, it's kind
of
like the
way of
parts of Mexico have, yeah, it's a way of life. It's a lifestyle. Mexico is a lifestyle. But they, different areas of Mexico are going to have slightly different cultures. Do we agree?
Yeah.
Yeah. Up by the border, compared to in Oaxaca, you might have a different sort of cultural influence, right? What do they do in Mexico that's very culture based? I'm thinking like parties or
cows and pigs.
Okay. What's a cultural tradition? Sorry, think of holidays. That's very culture based, right?
Tamales.
Okay. What holidays do they eat? Something specific though, and maybe in Mexico.
I don't know.
Yeah, I can't think of that either.
Okay, well I'll go Hawaiian since I know one from there. Hawaiians, whenever they have a big fiesta, they'll cook a pig underground.
Oh
yeah. Okay.
Big roast.
Yeah. So that culture might influence that sort of food choice because boar was. Native to the Hawaiian Islands, and they would go kill it and then cook it underground and then have that sort of party to celebrate whatever might be happening, and they're going to eat pork. Okay. So what about religious? So we talked about culture a little bit. What about religion? How does religion affect food choices?
Some religions don't allow you to eat certain foods.
Okay, so some religions do not allow certain foods. Name one.
Fitness doesn't allow...
Fitness is my religion, and I don't eat... processed food. Okay. What real religions? I worship the gods of fitness too. May the gods of fitness bring me gains. But what religious factors? What's up?
Who don't eat pork?
Yeah.
Who doesn't eat pork at some time or any time or what's up?
Muslims.
Muslims don't eat pork.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what other?
Jewish religion has like some.
Kosher.
Jewish
kosher,
religion has
yeah.
some rules, right? It has to be kosher, which means it has to be blessed by a rabbi.
Yeah.
Okay, and also it has to be cleaned appropriately or spiritually cleansed. I think they call it. What else is a religious tradition for food?
Isn't there one that don't eat cows?
Yeah. What religion doesn't eat beef?
Hinduism.
In from what country? Yeah, India. Okay. Obviously, you can be Hindu from other countries, but it originated in India, and they considered the cow to be very sacred, and they wouldn't eat any cow meat.
Just beef. Roaming around.
Yeah. And they're just roaming around mooing and pooping and stuff. And,
people are starving right next to them.
That's true, yeah. but it's a crime in India to kill and eat a cow. I think it's getting a little more lax, but especially in the Hindu specific areas, it's very looked down upon to eat beef and kill a cow in that city. So those sort of factors can affect religion too. Fun things that also about religion that you may have read in. I read a book called the Paleo Manifesto, and they're going over how religion has a huge influence on also food safety too. Okay, it turns out in the Old Testament there was more than just 10 commandments. Okay, there is actually about 650 commandments.
Whoa!
And about 70% of them had to do with food safety.
And what
food safety? Okay, meaning one of the commandments is. You must wash your hands before you eat. That was literally a commandment in the Old Testament, which was basically the premise for Judaism was the Old Testament. So, yeah, you must wash your hands before you eat. you must bathe regularly. So that's a little bit more beyond food, but you must bathe regularly. You cannot eat pork when it's lived in other or next to wild other wild or other farm animals or something.
No social pigs. So
yeah, no social pigs.
Only the introverts.
Pigs were looked at in those days as the garbage eaters. They would just go around and eat anything. So they were considered unsanitary, and you shouldn't eat pork unless it was properly raised by and blessed by a rabbi. So there's actually a lot of religion that peers into food, and that does affect food choices as well. Okay. So what about, let's go to sensory. How might our senses affect food choices, or just eating?
Huge,
right? Okay. If something doesn't taste good, are you going to eat it?
No.
No, but if something doesn't taste good to you, does that mean it's not going to taste good to everyone?
No.
No, it means that just to you, if you don't like the taste of garlic, you probably aren't going to eat anything that has garlic on it. If you don't like the texture of mushy mushrooms or avocado, you're probably not going to eat those foods, right? Okay, my wife hates mushy stuff, so she won't eat, like, slimy mushrooms.
She won't eat the bad.
She won't... It's my wife you're talking about there.
You want to go step outside. Oh, my God.
It's... Oh, man. Alright, it's a little late to the party. Okay, yes, my wife eats bananas.
Right.
So texture is going to affect foods too. An avocado might be kind of slimy and a little bit soft and mushy, which some people may like, some people might not like. Okay, salty foods are typically what we're attracted to. Most of us are. Some people have the opposite reaction to salt and don't like a lot of salt or whatnot. The flavors, so taste and smell. If you smell something tasty, you just instantly start salivating typically?
Oh, yeah.
So that's going to affect our food choices. I mean, when we walked into In-N-Out on Friday, that smell, I smelled it from like 2 blocks away. I'm like, oh, like that smell just reminds me of just awesomeness. And I instantly get hungry and I want to go eat In-N-Out. Okay?
I'm listening.
And then the taste of something, obviously, you know, like, we already kind of mentioned that. If foods taste good, we want to eat more of them, right? Has anybody had something that's so delicious, but you ate it so much that you no longer liked it? Okay. I had, like, a little turkey scramble with avocado, and I ate that for, like 3 or 4 weeks in a row on, like, 2 nights a week. And by the end of the 4th week, I was just like, I can't eat this again. It's delicious, but I just like can't, like it's just, I've eaten it too much. Okay, so there's factors in that sense as well. And then the last one is appearance. Anybody ever go to a really nice restaurant and they just make that plate look so pretty? It's like, I don't even want to touch it. It looks so nice, you know? The appearance of food matters. My food that I cook for myself on a daily basis is mushed into a pan and stirred up with some coconut oil and vegetables, and it's just a plop of mush that I just eat. Is that very appealing typically? No. Okay. Does it taste good? It tastes okay. I'm not a very good cook, but it tastes a little salty. I had a little salt and pepper on it. But I know it's healthy, so that's my choice, is to go a little bit more towards the health aspect than to focus on taste, per se. But appearance-wise, you could have something that looks really pretty, like a nice chicken breast with a drizzled couscous sauce or something, I don't even know.
Turkey out of the oven.
Like a nice pretty turkey with a golden skin, and just want to eat it all and leave all the meat just
stuff.
So appearance really matters. You know, if you go to this 5-star restaurant and you have the best tasting food of your life, but it looks like a plop on a plate, is it that, like, are you going to leave there saying like, oh, that was the best restaurant I've ever had, even if it tasted the best? Probably not, because there's an element of appearance that really matters with food choice and food selection. So also we have cognitive food factors. So cognitive factors that affect food. Learned food habits. What's probably going to be one of the biggest effects on your nutrition throughout your life?
Biggest effects of nutrition.
Yeah. Why are you going to typically eat a certain way?
The
way that you were raised eating, right? Okay, so those are going to be learned food habits. My mom cooked spaghetti and Big Ben's rice in a bag and, you know, Sloppy Joe's and all this amazing crap food. Crap food. And when I first went off, started living on my own, went to college and that sort of stuff, what was I choosing to eat? I was choosing to eat Big Ben rice in a bag, top ramen. I was easy eating, making myself spaghetti. I was getting fast food and just simple stuff. Because my learned food habits told me that I just eat what I was raised eating. Like, I don't know any different. I don't know that I should go cook my own food and eat something healthier. Because what I was raised eating is my learned food habits. That makes sense.
You don't have learned food habits? Dogs. They're like the explorers of eating. Because you put anything in front of their face, they'll be like, fuck it. And they'll try. Imagine having
correct.
That ability. Dude. That's so cool.
But, I mean, when you think of Pavlov, right? There's a learned food habit. You ring a bell and the dog's good. And they ring a bell, bring out some food for enough times, and whenever you ring that bell, that dog's going to start salivating, thinking that, yeah, that's a train. That's got a learned food response, too. You know that when mom goes in the kitchen, food's coming soon. You know?
You get when you hear the clinking.
Oh, the clinking of the food. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, my God. It's okay. Start with that.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, cool. We also have social factors. Who here has been eating really well, trying to stick to a diet, and then they go out to a friend's birthday and they just blow up and eat crap food? Yeah. Okay. Is social factors on food going to be one of the biggest hurdles for you and your clients?
Huge.
Right? I eat well on a consistent basis, but when I go out to an event where all of a sudden I'm there and I'm hungry and all that's there is crap food, am I kind of forced to eat that crap food?
Sort of.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much, unless I want to go hungry. Or if you go to your cousin or grandma's house or something and they're cooking you food, you kind of are forced to eat it, right? Regardless of if it fits what you're trying to eat.
It's rude if you're not.
Yeah. Right? So there's a social factor there that says if you don't eat the food that somebody cooked for you, you are rude. Okay. So social factors matter a ton. Do we agree?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What other social factors might there be? Well, what happens when you guys come here? Or what happened when you came here? For those of you that have been here for a bit.
I started eating better.
You started eating better? Okay. Was that influenced by your surroundings?
Yep.
Did you see everyone else started to eat well?
Everybody started bringing their own bananas.
Okay, so bananas.
Intense baptism propaganda.
All of a sudden, we're just like, everyone's in here. with just rows of bananas.
We should plant a banana tree somewhere.
We should. So when you first came here, all of a sudden people were eating well, people were trying to do their best to achieve their fitness goals. Did that social environment sort of influence your decisions to want to eat better?
Mm-hmm.
And get in better shape and gain muscle or lose body fat, whatever it may be? Okay. So social factors could also be something like a best friend. You and your best friend. Your best friend starts to get in shape. Are you going to kind of want to do that too?
Mm-hmm.
There's a social factor there. So peer pressure, I'm sure we've all heard of it. Peer pressure to have a drink one night when you're like, oh no, I'm gonna go home. I'm cool. Or that social factor is kind of like putting like a little pressure on you, saying like, oh, let's have some fun. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, I gotta go to bed early. I just don't want to make sure that my testosterone levels stay super elevated next morning. No, you don't have to explain it like that. But. Those factors or that peer pressure is going to have an influence on your nutrition, okay, and your health and your habits of how you live your life. And then also nutrition and health beliefs, okay? Do people believe that eating healthy whole grains is the best way to lose weight? Okay, is that promoted by anyone in particular that you know of? Okay, the USDA says eat 6 servings of healthy whole grains. Okay, right? Is that a food belief system or nutrition and health belief?
Oprah
does it. Is Oprah a good example of why you shouldn't do that?
Yeah.
Okay. And then also advertising. Anybody ever drive by the freeway and see that that Big Carl or that double Western bacon cheeseburger on the Hardee's sign. I'm joking, not Hardee's, guys. Come on, it's Carl's Jr. Let's get real. No East Coasters over here?
Like hot Cheetos.
Hardee's? Hardee's?
Oh,
yeah. Hardee's. What's up?
Oh, I saw Corral.
Golden Corral?
Golden Corral on the first time ever. Yeah.
What did you say, Miguel?
I like the Chick-fil-A Bill Awards. They have the two
Chick-fil-A, got the cows.
Chick-fil-A. I actually have Chick-fil-A flavored chicken for today. I marinated it with pickle juice, and it tastes just like Chick-fil-A chicken.
No way. You have to teach me.
It's dope.
Whenever I just see the letters Chick-fil-A or that little red writing with the little swirl and the little chicken head on top of the C, I literally crave popcorn chicken because I used to eat that. Whenever we'd go to the mall and my mom would go shopping, I would run up to Chick-fil-A and just get the, like, hundreds of chicken tender little nuggets that were breaded and just seasoned.
So it's
and,
comfort food.
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah. And I totally relate a response to that food to a time in my life, which was fun going to the mall and like having all this fun.
Yeah.
Going to the toy store and the candy shop. What's that sweet spot? Or what's that candy shop in the Galleria?
Sweet Factory.
Sweet Factory. Oh, and I get the candy necklaces and wear them and eat them and then flick them at people and it's great. Let's go back. I'm eating Chick-fil-A, guys.
We're going to the mall.
We're testing our social influences on exercise.
I mean, on
nutrition. Okay, and then also we have health status and genetics. Let's talk about genetics. Based off of your genetics, you might be more prone to eating certain foods. There's a big kind of controversy here saying whether obesity is genetic or whether it's a learned behavior based on your social factors. Is obesity more social factor based or environmental factors or even economic factors, or is it purely genetics? And guess what the overweight people are going to say, or the fat people are going to say?
Genetics.
It's genetics. I can't help this.
Right.
I can't help it.
I'm
just big bone. I'm a bigger person. I come from a big family. They're going to throw all those excuses in your face, right? Okay. But if they ate perfectly their entire life and threw a little bit of exercise mixed in with there, would they probably have those same problems? Probably not. Okay. They might not be able to get as lean as like a shredded bodybuilder guy, but that might be a genetic factor. Having a six-pack at 13% body fat compared to some people can't have a six-pack till they have 5% body fat. That is a genetic factor based on aesthetic and looks. Okay, so taste sensitivity, what you prefer, do you like bitter or do you like sweet? Do you have a possible fat tooth or sweet tooth? Okay, I have a fat tooth. I could eat butter.
That's
off a stick. Nibble
fucking,
on butter. Oh.
That's fucking nasty.
It's gotta be a little salt. gotta be a little salted, but just like spoonfuls of butter I could eat as a kid.
You're the only
butter and sketty. Yeah, it's butter and
sketty. But what about like kids that were just chubby their whole fucking childhood and then they grew up in their high school and they're still chubby? Like they're not fat, they're just a little bigger than the average.
I mean, that's where some people would argue. Some people would argue it's genetics, but at the same time, you'd have to analyze their family social or their family life. What does their family cook? Is their family overweight? There is the possibility of having a kid that's overweight with parents that are completely skinny.
I bet you he loves magic and video games.
Fat.
So like a
he was fat from, I say 9 till about 14, and as he started getting taller, he started to
know. Yeah, okay. Yeah, but, I mean, to tell the truth, there is a way to eat that you can avoid becoming overweight. And when we think of the food system that we're currently in and all the advertisements geared towards kids and food... It's very easy to make the best decisions based on your food as a kid and as a parent even. It's like your kid is watching Nickelodeon and there's this this frog hopping around saying, "Do you want some smacks?" That was not handy. Smear smacks or even pop. What's it called? Corn pops. Okay, corn puffs. Gotta have my pops, right? I had to have my pops all the time.
Tony the Tiger, you know.
Yeah, Tony the Tiger, Lucky Charms, Magically Delicious. I mean, I can name all of those characters that were on all of my cereal boxes because they were advertised to me like it's no one's business. Did I go to that grocery store and yell at my mom saying I want these like corn pops or Frosted Flakes or whatever, and I'd get three or four boxes of cereal and like be so excited going home and eat my milk and my cereal and watching my cartoons, and then the commercial would come on and be like, yeah, positive reinforcement. It's like, they're great. I agree, Tony. They are great. Okay, so... And yeah, you put sugar, like, or you get, oh, mom will get you the healthy option of cornflakes, and then you just throw sugar all over it, right? Okay. I mean, think about it. As a kid, it's relatively difficult to make health-conscious decisions, because there's not much education given towards kids and food. Because they expect kids to go run out and play and burn off any energy.
Because my mother really didn't make healthy food, but we're looking at it like, I don't want to eat this.
It's
and
a choice, dude. Parents can, buckle down.
Yeah, he's a smack.
Yeah,
because
they're
going
to make you
so
sit at the table.
Yeah.
So
look at Haiti. Go to Haiti and count all the fat kids in Haiti. And tell me, you know, how many of them are...
Well, that doesn't work with kids. So.
No,
it doesn't.
There's other countries that are doing just fine.
So. okay, so... And then health status. Based on health status, you might have... due to physical restrictions because of disease, you might have issues... declining taste sensitivity. Anybody really like something as a kid, and as you aged, you dislike something, or actually vice versa? Anybody ever have something that was like, I hate this food as a kid, and then you grow up and you're like, oh, it's not that bad.
Brussels sprouts,
avocado,
yeah,
okay. Onions for me, tomatoes for me,
mayonnaise,
ranch dressing.
I hated both of those
as a kid.
I love them now.
Yeah, oh, so good. Okay, so what happens is actually as you age, you lose, we'll say, sensory receptors in your tongue. You actually have less taste buds as an adult or as you age than you do as a kid. So kids might be tasting all that extra stuff that you get in an onion, and as an adult, all of a sudden that stuff simmers down just a little bit, or all of those sensory receptors in your tongue, or the taste buds, and all of a sudden that onion, you aren't getting this mouthful of crazy flavor, you're just getting the perfect amount of like, oh, that's kind of good. You used to hate onions as a kid. And as an adult, I'm like, I can't get enough onions. I'm like, they're so yummy. Let's grill them. Let's saute them in butter. And
I hate them. I like the way they smell when they're cooking with them.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so as far as factors that affect food choices, we have to kind of start to understand nutrition in a sense that it's a social, environmental, economic, crazy world of food choices. And there is food choices based off of all of these factors that are going to lead towards health. And there's food choices based off all these factors that are going to lead toward disease and a lack of health. So as it goes through each of these, it'll explain in detail a little bit more as we get to the bottom of page 3. We have sensory influences, cognitive influences, food cravings, comfort foods, discomfort foods. Anybody ever have anybody an emotional eater? Like something happens and you just want to go eat some food or something, or you binge
sometimes.
Eat sometimes? Yeah, okay. Those are kind of comfort foods, or you might call them discomfort foods. At the bottom of page 4, looking at page 5, you have food cravings. Anybody have something? Anybody have a bad cravings? Anybody want to share their cravings?
I did last night.
Yeah, what did you crave last night?
Lemon hot Cheetos.
Lemon hot? Did you eat them?
No, I didn't.
You didn't? Okay, good. What kind of type of food cravings do you have?
I'm always craving fried chicken, unfortunately.
Okay, all right, fried chicken.
That's like my
weakness. Okay, there's Buffalo Wild Wings right across the street.
Thanks.
No, I'm joking. It's close. It's not there. So food cravings are huge. Chocolate? Anybody crave chocolate?
No.
Okay. My wife, when she's not eating bananas, is my wife when she's, and it's that time of the month. There you go. That's a safe way to say that, right? She is a chocolate person. She has to have some chocolate. We buy little dark chocolate squares. And she like nibbles on a chocolate, and then I eat some. And then I have my man period, and then we're all eating chocolate. So food cravings are massive. Pregnancy can affect. Cravings during food, or during pregnancy. Unique cravings that my cousin never ate red meat, and all of a sudden when she got pregnant with her first child, she couldn't get enough like steaks and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right, yeah, then like we said, advertising and promotion and social factors, we kind of touched on all of those as we get into page 6 and 7. And and then it gets into environmental influences, which we talked about, kind of that economic sort of thing, how based on the total amount of income you have, based off of the price of food, it may force you to eat specific food or make specific food choices that may be healthy or maybe less healthy. And cultural influences, yeah, in the top of page 8, you have the cultural influences. If you were visiting China, you would sample the local delicacy, and guess what it is? Deep-fried scorpion.
Yeah,
okay.
Maybe.
Some countries eat the crap out of bugs. Bugs are just like, it's a normal sort of thing. Crickets, what's the...
escargot.
Okay, wait, snails in France, okay.
Chocolate-covered grasshoppers.
Yeah, grasshoppers, there you go, in Taiwan, Vietnam, ton of bugs.
The worm.
Okay, okay. What's that called? Cusano Rojo?
Yeah.
So that's the one that has Cusano Rojo? I don't know. I've been to Mexico once or twice. Had the we played this game where you rolled the dice, and if you got a one, you got to roll again. And if you got 7 ones total, you get to pick a shot. Then you roll ones, the next person rolls, and the person who gets the 14th one has to take the shot. And then the person that rolls the 21st one has to pay for the shot. And if you ever got the first 7, you know you're getting the Cusano Rojo. It's the tequila shot with the worm at the bottom. But I don't drink, so.
I thought that was called mezcal.
There's different brands, but this one, it was like the cheapest, worst tequila. It had a worm at the bottom.
Tequila is the best tequila. I don't know. Go ritzy with tequila.
Okay, so, yeah, cultural influences are massive. Religion, cultural cuisine in different parts of the world are going to have different factors. And that all finishes up being talked about on page 9. I kind of like these quick bites. If you have all these quick bites on the corners, if you want to read them, they're just like fun facts that are kind of like you could throw out in a conversation and just be like, oh, cool. Yes.
Going back to page 5,
going to page 5.
It says pica, the craving for and consumption of non-food items such as dirt, clay, or laundry starch.
Cool.
It says it's associated with pregnancy. What is that about?
I've heard of the improving intestinal motility, meaning like pushing food through your digestive tract. With clay, females will crave dirt during pregnancy. And sometimes that can help, like, push food through their system if maybe there's something that they didn't like that
dogs eat grass.
Yeah, to increase bulk to their diet, kind of, almost like a fiber in a way to try to push through. Luckily, we can't absorb anything through our intestinal lining of that size, so if you do eat clay, it's not going to go into your blood. It's going to just pass through and typically grab stuff to pull out with it, meaning you're going to poop it out. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that we'll go over in this. That are more fun facts. You don't really need to talk to your clients about Pika. Pikachu! Oh, that was so 15 years ago. Pokemon, man. Yeah, probably more years. Okay, so let's talk about, on page 10, the SAD diet. Anybody know what the SAD diet stands for? SAD diet, S-A-D, it's an acronym.
Specifically American diet.
What's that?
Standard American
diet. The standard American diet. And why do we call it the SAD diet?
Look at us.
Because it's sad, okay? Because it's probably not the best diet, right? The typical American diet. What's great about America is they open the possibility to do anything you want and create income in any way that you can, and you can be free and have this freedom and stuff, but that also means that it might come at the cost of people's health, we'll say, for instance, in the food industry. Is the cheapest food possible the best food? No, but how do people advertise a lot of food products?
Price.
By price. Okay. Lean cuisines or something might not be the healthiest thing, but they're at $2 a pop, and I could feed myself for a day, that's an option. As a college student, I was like, oh, three lean cuisines a day, $6, I'm out of here. Little did I know I could buy 2 pounds of chicken for $6, little Brussels sprouts or something for $1, and then just cook all that together for $7, having a healthy meal. Okay, so let's talk about the standard American diet, or the American diet on page 10. Just a quick bite, kind of fun. America's favorite vegetables. When Americans eat vegetables, they're most likely to eat potatoes in the form of French fries. So that is America's favorite vegetable, is potatoes. But we don't eat them in the healthy way. We kind of eat them in the deep-fried potato way, like French fries.
Pizza still listed as a vegetable?
Pizza.
I heard that recently, that the American government considers pizza a vegetable because it has tomato sauce on it. Tomato is technically a fruit by species, but we put it in the vegetable classification because it's not sweet or doesn't have any.
Is avocado considered a fruit?
Yes, it is as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. And then tomatoes as a sauce or ketchup, and then onions and iceberg lettuce. So the two top most consumed vegetables in America are potatoes and tomatoes, but not in the form of a whole potato or a whole tomato. They're in the form of chopped and or processed in some way. Yeah. All right, so the American diet. What do you guys think the American diet is?
McDonald's.
Anything?
So maybe some fast food. Fast food is part of the American diet?
Some convenience.
Convenience? Is America all about making it to the top and having that American dream sort of thing? And we don't want food to get in the way of that, so we optimize the convenience and time that you can consume foods, right? Anybody know of any foods that advertise as being very easy and quick to eat?
Juicy.
Maybe liquid foods, okay, what else? What else is advertised as, like, quick to eat? Convenience.
All
your fast food, for sure.
Right.
You have, like, top ramen. 45 seconds and you get a whole meal, okay? What else?
All the microwaves.
Yeah, microwavable stuff, quick, convenient food, okay? So the standard American diet is based on convenience, good. It typically tastes, but what tastes are we focusing on? Like salty, very salty foods, sweet foods. What do we typically drink in America?
Soda.
Sodas?
Pop.
Yeah. We definitely drink sodas, and typically less water, more juices, sodas, and
not even 100%
coffee, tea, stuff like that, more consumed than water. Okay. So it seems like we're constantly reminded about how to eat healthy, right? But typically most people choose to maybe not ignore that advice, but just go more for the convenience and the cheaper price, right? Okay. Okay, so what is typically said about our diet? What is typically recommended for us to eat that's considered healthy as far as the standard American diet? What do we use? Anybody know of anything that we use as a guideline?
The triangle.
Okay, the food pyramid. Okay, food pyramid. Everybody know the food pyramid?
No.
Anybody never heard of the food pyramid?
Okay. I don't remember,
yeah.
But I remember seeing
it. What are we recommended in the food pyramid, or now they call it My Plate? Okay, they have like My Plate, which is a little bit different, but it's the same concepts.
Dairy.
So at the base of the food pyramid, which you should consume in the most amount, is
good
grains,
whole grains, right? Then we move up into
fruits, veggies.
Fruits and vegetables, good in that second one. Then a little bit upper on the pyramid to eat less of.
Meat
and
dairy.
Good, meat and dairy. And then at the top you have sweets, desserts, oils, fats. Okay. Have most people attempted to do that at some point in their lives?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. Okay. But there's something wrong with that, but just not working in some way, that people aren't sticking to it enough, or maybe just the convenience factor has people eating out more and not even worrying about that sort of stuff. Can you be relatively healthy if you eat the food pyramid?
Probably.
Yeah, according to the American government, yes. According to the studies they've done, yes. If you eat the the way that the food pyramid recommends, you can be healthy. But what do they typically focus on as far as in total? Like, here's some foods to eat and about the amount of servings, but what is the number one thing? What do they base all diets around?
Caloric
intake. Okay. What's the recommended caloric intake for the average American?
2,000.
2,000, based on a 2,000 calorie diet, right? Okay. Percentage there, 33% of your recommended vitamin C based on a 2,000 calorie diet. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we have calories, and calories are pretty woven into the standard American diet. People count calories, right? Do we agree?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows someone that's trying to hit their caloric total for the day, and a lot of times it's not with the best foods, but they're just trying at least to lower their total food intake, counting calories. Okay. So what's good also about the American diet is that we get a lot of influences from a ton of other cultures. So, we have awesome Mexican food, we have good Chinese, Japanese, like sushi and that type of food. We have
Korean barbecue
food. We're pretty much just a melting pot of different cultural eating styles. Is there any types of any specific countries that you would say have a good diet or that typically eat something that keeps them a little leaner?
I wouldn't say it's a good diet, but when I was in South Korea, rice is
right, okay.
Every meal.
And is there typically a ton of overweight people in South Korea?
No, they're small and brittle.
Yeah. Okay, small and brittle, okay. But and rice is a huge staple of their diet, right? Okay. What do they call it? Not the Oriental diet, or they call it the Asian diet? What's like where they eat rice and sushi, rice and fish, Japanese diet? Japanese? It's called something, but typically people from Japan are not very overweight when they focus on eating their sushi-based, rice-based diets, okay?
And their cancerous diseases are low.
And then that might be due to the fact that they don't process their food as much. It's just simple white rice with some fish, raw fish, so it's not even cooked, just kind of right there. And that makes up a ton of their diet, seaweeds and stuff like that, a lot of raw foods.
One thing I noticed is they don't eat a lot of sweets over there.
Yeah, and they don't eat a lot of sweets.
South Korea for several years, they don't eat a lot of sweets.
Yeah, and then they probably don't have a lot of options for sweets either, right?
Not that I've seen yet.
Cool. Okay, so when it comes down to it, the typical American diet is going to have a ton of influences, and the American diet in Alabama is going to be different from the American diet in Oregon or something. But overall, we typically tend to choose the more convenient options that might be a little bit more processed and not maybe be the best for us. Standard American diet, do we agree?
Mm-hmm.
A sad diet? Okay.
That's funny.
All right, so let's go ahead and get into what nutrients are. Page 11, or page 10, bottom of 10 and top of page 11. So there's classes of nutrients. We need to understand the, we'll say, six classes of nutrients in figure 1.8. Most people don't think of water as a nutrient, but it is. Okay, H2O is one of the most important nutrients to life on this planet, for sure. And so we need to consume water, right? Water is a nutrient. Good. What else do we have as nutrients? We have protein, okay? We have fats, and we have carbohydrates. What are those called?
Macronutrients,
okay? So macronutrients are the proteins, carbohydrates, and fats, okay? Then we have the, what's the opposite of macronutrient?
Micronutrients,
which are what?
Vitamins
and minerals, good. And all of these are going to play a role in our health. And eating them, all of them in total, should, in appropriate amounts, keep us nice and healthy. Okay. So, when we define those nutrients, we could also look at things if in the bottom right of page 11, things like phytochemicals, which are basically, they call them substances in plants that may possess health protective effects, even though they are not essential for life, so extra, little extra phytochemicals. And then antioxidants, which are basically going to be vitamins and minerals that might reduce oxidative damage or prevent oxidative damage to cells. One of the most damaging things to our bodies is actually just oxygen exposure. It's basically called a oxygen molecule typically carries a negative charge, we'll say, in which an electron there's an extra electron, which is called a free radical. It's basically extra electrons in attached to molecules that are more or less damaging to our cells. Meaning right now we're getting oxidative damage from the air, more or less. This is what causes aging, we'll say. So antioxidants are specific chemicals that grab these extra electrons and create a balance as opposed to a negative charge, in a way, causing less oxidative damage to be present to the cells of the body, which is kind of cool. Do we need to go crazy on antioxidants, though, and buy into all the marketing that says, oh, vitamin water has this many antioxidants?
No.
Probably not. No, and we'll explain that as we get further into this.
Is it true that something to do with antioxidants lowers your testosterone or some weird...
Are you reading that in there?
No, just something I've heard. Somehow
I've heard
some
of.
Some way of just ruining gains or something. Had some like negative effect consuming a whole ton of antioxidants.
Well, the antioxidants are pretty simple. They're just vitamins and minerals. It's vitamin A, E, C, and selenium and zinc. So just like some vitamins and minerals. It's like, it's anyone, they call them antioxidants, but it's mainly just vitamins and minerals.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a few select vitamins and minerals that are very antioxidant. All right, so then as you get into page 12, we're going to look at the what functions these tool or these nutrients have on our body. So pretty much, so we have carbohydrates to start. What are carbohydrates pretty much solely for?
Energy.
Good. So carbohydrates really, they provide about 4 calories per gram, which you will need to know for the test. 4 calories per gram on page 12. And carbohydrates are pretty much, or they are only used to provide energy for the body. They make up no other process or anything in the body, just solely to provide energy. Does that mean that that's the only thing that can give us energy?
No.
No. Okay, there is other things that can give us energy. What else can give us energy?
Fats and oils.
Fats and proteins can also give us energy. Protein isn't as awesome at getting us energy because protein actually needs to be converted into a carbohydrate before it can give us energy. So it's not like you're going to eat a bunch of protein and then get a ton of energy spike right away like you would with a carbohydrate. Amino acids actually need to be chemically modified to then turn into a glucose molecule to be used. So protein can provide energy, but in a different way than carbohydrates, a little bit. Okay. Fats are very, very energy abundant. That 9 calories per gram, which you would need to know for the test as well. 9 calories per gram. And what does that mean? It means there's 9 calories in 1 gram of the food. So if you look on the nutrition label, it says 1 gram of fat, then it's going to have 9 calories associated with that 1 gram of fat. Okay. What other functions can these nutrients also work towards? Which is regulation of body processes are number 1 up there at the top, page 12 in that figure. Vitamins, lipids, or vitamins, fats, proteins, minerals, and water all help to regulate body processes. They are what you would might consider the raw materials of the body that you need to survive 100%. If you miss some vitamins, if you miss fat, if you miss protein, if you miss some minerals, and if you miss water, you will die. Dun, dun, dun. Okay. If you don't have carbohydrates, can you survive?
Yeah.
Yes, you can. Okay. That's because you can get energy from fats and proteins as well. If you're looking to run a marathon at the fastest time ever, if you don't eat carbohydrates, is that probably going to be your best bet?
No.
No, because carbohydrates provide energy, and more energy means more fuel, and more fuel means more ability to push yourself to a performance standard. Okay, but most of us Americans, are we going for performance in anything? Athletically? Not really. Maybe about 30% of Americans even participate in recreational sports. Okay, so the amount of carbohydrates that were recommended might not be the perfect amount, but we'll see as we continue. And then the last function for these sort of nutrients are going to be contribute to cell and body structure. Literally, like the building house of the cells, or the framework that builds the cells and builds, we'll say, bone, and contains all the functional elements of living, of life. You need fats, proteins, minerals, and water. Okay. All right. So, what's the difference between organic and inorganic nutrients or molecules, we'll say? Organic is basically going to... So when we think of organic, what do we think of, typically?
Free-range. I think of free-range chicken.
What do we think of when we think of organic?
Non-processed.
Okay, so not processed food that's not processed.
No chemicals,
no chemical additives, not used for like
all natural.
Okay, when we think of organic, we think of more as nature intended, maybe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this organic is going to be different, and I want you to know the difference between the two. Organic literally refers to anything that contains carbon, except for carbon dioxide. Okay. Anything that contains carbon, any molecule that contains carbon, is going to be considered an organic molecule. And then it says further down there, the term organic also is used to denote crops that are grown without synthetic fertilizers or chemicals. And then inorganic is literally anything that does not contain carbon, or very simple carbon, things like carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide. Salt, table salt is sodium chloride, doesn't contain carbon, therefore it's considered inorganic. And if you look at the bottom left, you have all the organic versus inorganic molecules. What does that really mean? Carbon is the basic element for life to occur. Okay, we need carbon. Everything that's living is a carbon-based living organism on this planet. Everything. Go team. All right, so it'll give you a little explanation on carbs, a little explanation on fats, a little explanation on proteins, a little explanation on vitamins. What do you need to know about carbohydrates? We're going to get more detailed as we get into the chapter on carbohydrates, so I'm not going to say too much about them. Fats. Maybe there's different types of fats, just like there's different types of carbs. And proteins, you have proteins come from different areas with different amino acid structures that make up different types of protein. And then vitamins, yeah. So what I really want you guys to know about the carbohydrates, proteins, fats, vitamins, minerals, water, is what they do in the body for this chapter. So they regulate body processes, contribute to cell and body structure, and supply energy. Which is from that figure 1.9 on page 12. All right. So energy and foods, looking at page 15. Foods have energy. What is a calorie, guys?
It's the unit of measurement for...
A calorie is a unit of measurement for energy stored in the food, right? Okay. Let's find out what a calorie really is. So, what is a kilocalorie and a calorie? Okay. So you can imagine that a calorie is a unit of heat energy. So how did they determine what a calorie would be? They determined, a calorie would be the unit of energy or heat energy. Unit of energy needed. This is going to be, let's do a kilocalorie since that's what we use in to measure everything. What's the difference between a calorie and a kilocalorie?
What is 1,000?
So kilo refers to 1,000 of an actual calorie. Okay, so an actual calorie is, I'll explain here, but an actual calorie is small. We measure everything in kilocalories, like we would like a distance in a kilometer. Kilometer. Kilometer.
So you can have like centicalories. And
you could have a centicalorie, yeah, but no, we don't. Nobody would use that in nutrition. So the unit of energy needed to raise, this is for a kilocalorie, raise 1 liter of water 1 degree Celsius. So the unit of energy or the unit of heat energy needed to raise 1 liter of water 1 degree Celsius. So looking at page 15, a actual small calorie is the unit of heat energy needed to raise 1 gram of water 1 degree Celsius. So a kilocalorie would raise 1 liter, which is 100 grams, or 1,000 grams of water. Or, yeah, I'm sorry, 1 liter. You're right. Thank you. 1 liter is 1 kilogram of water. Okay. All right, I might be doing that wrong, but it's 1 milliliter of water, 1 degree Celsius. Yeah.
Hold on. So is it 1 liter or 1 milliliter? Because that's a...
It says gram, but 1 gram is the same as 1 milliliter. It's the same volume, we'll say.
Okay.
1 milliliter is 1 square gram of water. Okay, so a kilocalorie would be the energy required to raise 1 liter of water 1 degree Celsius. So if we add 1 liter of water and we burn a carbohydrate, how many degrees would that water go up?
Four.
Four, because there's 4 calories, kilocalories, per gram of carbohydrate. That make sense to anyone? Kind of? Not at all? which we'll get into further, but... so if you look at the right side of page 15, you have that little bucket of water, and to the right it says 1 kilocalorie is the amount of energy that will raise the temperature of 1 kilogram of water by 1 degree Celsius. Our bodies produce heat, correct? Okay, so if we were to produce heat on a regular basis, that means we would be needing to burn some sort of energy, right? Okay. This is why it's possible to measure our energy output in calories as well, based off of the amount of heat that we're giving off of our bodies. So they figure that since you can measure the body heat in calories, we should measure food and the energy that food contains in calories as well. And then you have a nice little system that has calories in equals calories out equals no change. Or calories in exceeding calories out means weight or fat storage or increase in weight, or calories in less than calories out, or sorry, more than calories, less than calories out would mean weight loss. Okay, but our bodies are not 1 kilogram of water, are they? No. Okay, but we'll get into that at another time. Okay, so understanding kilocalories, if you look at... Yeah, how can we calculate the energy of the available foods? 39 grams of carbohydrates. So if I want you guys to know anything right now from this little section is how many calories per gram each of the macronutrients is. So each of the macronutrients, we have carbohydrates, is abbreviated CHO. How many calories per gram?
12.
Don't make me smack you.
Javi.
Somebody say it. You said that in the beginning.
Did I say 12?
12 calories per gram. It provides 12 calories per gram.
No, 4.
I think I said 4. Hopefully I said 4. Four, four calories per gram. Okay? Carbohydrate is 4 calories per gram. A fat is how many calories per gram?
9
calories per gram. Okay? And then we have a protein is what?
4
again. Calories per gram. Okay? Meaning the which of the following macronutrients stores more energy?
Fat.
Does that make sense that if you eat more fat, you eat more calories?
Yeah.
Does it make sense why they might tell you to eat less fat?
Just math alone.
Based on math alone, okay?
More than double.
But unfortunately, our bodies are not a liter of water, which we'll get into another time. So, you can see why it's easy to villainize fat as being the one that makes people fat, right? Because if all calories are equal, then what has the most calories? Fat. Well, then what should you not eat the most of if you wanted to eat less calories?
Fat.
Okay. But, really quickly, this is just a contraindication, just to throw it out there. Look back at the function of the macronutrients. Look back at the function of the macronutrients. If, I'm going to prove something to you guys. This is called the law of thermodynamics, okay? Calories in is equal to calories out equals no weight change. That's called the law of thermodynamics.
Thermodynamics.
Okay? Now I'll go ahead and write that right here. Law of thermodynamics. Law of thermodynamics. Okay? If all macronutrients were equal, then they should all have the same function. Do we agree? But they don't, do they? No. Carbohydrates do what? What's the function of carbohydrates?
Energy.
Pure energy and only energy, right? Can it do anything else?
No.
Absolutely not. Carbohydrates, 100%, every ounce of carbohydrates that you have has to be used as energy, or what's going to happen?
Turn fat.
It's going to turn into stored energy, which will either be glycogen, but if your glycogen stores are full, meaning all the carbohydrate stores in your body are full, where is it going to go?
Fat cells.
Okay. It's going to turn into a triglyceride, be a glycerol backbone. Okay. And then fats and proteins don't only give energy, they do what?
They regulate body processes
and
contribute to
cell structure. So, if the law of thermodynamics is saying that all calories are equal and calories in versus calories out means that if calories in equals calories out, then there's no weight gain. Why is it so tough to lose weight on a low-calorie diet?
Because your body's not getting what it needs to regulate.
If you keep a low-fat diet, you're going to struggle on some body processes and struggle on contribution to cell structure. If you peak and have the most in carbohydrates, you're going to have a ton of energy available, right? Do you need all that energy if you aren't being very active at all?
No.
Okay. So the first issue we run into with the law of thermodynamics and calories in general is the fact that 100% of fat does not go to energy. Probably only about half, if that, goes to energy. Because what is fat important for?
Structure.
Everything. Every single one of our cellular membranes in our bodies are made of fat. Phospholipids. Most of our hormones, guess what? They're fat-based. A ton of our cellular structure is just fat. Guess what our brain is?
Fat.
Mostly fat. Guess what covers all of our nerves? Fat. Okay, so if fat went 100% to energy, yes, then it's okay to demonize fat. But it doesn't. Okay. Nobody else is as excited as I am right now.
Yeah.
But
have they figured out the ratio on that fat, how much goes to...
They I mean, it'd be really tough to tell. You'd have to do a whole body analysis on every cell and how much fat is used to create phospholipid membranes, myelin sheaths, brain tissue, new cell formation. I mean, it would be so intricate and difficult, it would be near impossible. I'm sure maybe in the future they can.
But give or take, like 50%?
I'm not going to put a number on it. I'm not going to put a number on it just because I know that it would be a complete out of left field sort of guess.
For 10.
But you have to understand that then you look at protein, and protein has to be turned into carbohydrates to even be used as energy. Does your body want to turn protein into carbohydrates for energy?
No.
What does it want to do with protein?
It wants to use it for gains,
right? Okay, it wants to build cellular structure. It wants to create new enzymes that build things. It wants to regulate body processes and, just build. Protein is a raw material. It's like it's the workers that literally build cells. Our protein.
Long Lego.
It's the long Lego. Okay, I like that. Okay. It's the foundation, you could say. So when we talk about the law of thermodynamics, we have to understand that calories are not equal. They're not. And that's our first mistake in attempting to lose weight based on a caloric theory. What's pretty much the number one way people try to lose weight in this country?
Calories.
Counting calories, eat less food. Okay, really quickly, let's look at the page 16. Where are we at? Okay. So, be smart. Calculate the percentages of calories in certain foods. Okay, what is the recommended... macronutrient percentage intake in calories for carbohydrates? How many carbohydrates are recommended by the USDA?
By percentage?
Like 60.
By percentage, yes. What was it?
30?
60. 65.
So it's 45 to 65% of calories is recommended. In carbohydrates as far as percentage of total calories. What's recommended for fat right here in the middle section of page 16? Current health recommendations suggest that limiting fat intake to about 35%. Okay, that's right at the top paragraph under be food smart, calculate the percentage of calories of food on page 16. What's recommended for protein?
Like
10 to 35%. So, when we have the highest percentage of calories going towards carbohydrates, and carbohydrates can only be used as energy. If we don't use that energy, what happens? It goes into the body as stored fat, or stored glycogen first, and then if once glycogen stores fill up, stored fat. Okay. All right. And then we eat less fat, maybe 20 to 35%. We have less raw materials to build cell structure and regulate body processes. If we eat less protein, we have less raw materials and less regulation of body processes, or raw materials for that. So does it make sense to limit our raw materials and eat more energy-based foods?
No.
Not necessarily, right? But yet we've been doing this for the last 30, 40 years, since about 1975, 1980. Actually, 1970-ish to 1980.
Is that when the triangle, the...
Food pyramid, yes, early 80s. Yeah. Started to get in classrooms in the early 80s. Because when you were taught, when you were raised, you didn't have any food classes or anything, nutrition,
really,
anything.
And I thought it was, for some reason, I keep thinking the 40s, but no, it didn't go back.
Yeah.
No, I didn't have any of that.
Yeah, because you didn't really need it back in 1922. Or... I'm joking, Art, I'm joking. Yeah, you didn't need that in 1960s.
No, man.
Because kids didn't have anything else to do but go run around and play.
They
there wasn't an obesity epidemic.
My parents would fight to get us back in the house. That's
yeah.
all we wanted to do,
stay
outside. Stay
outside, yeah. And also the foods that you were eating weren't from the food industry, were they?
No.
I mean, there wasn't like a, hey, I mean, there was a little bit more in the 60s than it was like the 40s.
Processed
stuff.
Foods existed.
But processed foods were, I mean, what was your processed food?
Bologna.
Yeah, okay, yeah, maybe
slices of bologna.
Some bologna or deli meats, maybe like some cookies and stuff
mm-hmm.
here and there. Some and like I'm sure the C&H lady taught your mom how to cook some
yeah,
cakes
sure,
and snacks
yeah,
and candies
yeah.
in the bright pink package. C&H,
C&H.
Mommy uses it to make her cakes. She makes the greatest cookies, snacks, and candies. In the bright pink package. Hey, at least I got your attention, by the way.
These are like old commercials.
I remember
yeah.
that one.
Remember that one?
Yeah.
They brought that one back for when I was a kid, and I was like, yeah.
I think we're probably in the same age group. Eight.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. See this face? Yeah, that's nice.
Deceptive.
Yeah, this is just, it's pure deception right here. Okay, so now they talk about, so we have our macronutrient ratios, which is 45 to 65% of calories from carbohydrates, 20 to 35 for fats, and then 10 to 35 for protein. And then it gives you little estimations on page 16 in percentage of 2,000 calorie diet, and it asks you to do a little bit of math there, and it shows you the example below. So it says 55% of 2,000 calories is 1,100. 1,100 divided by 4 is going to be 275 total grams of carbohydrates. Okay. I could see why America's obese. Okay, if they were eating perfectly pure glucose in like rice and or potato starch or pure starches, you wouldn't have the same obesity epidemic.
Meaning a complex carb.
Not necessarily just a complex carb, because when people think of complex carbs, they think of whole grains. I'm talking pure starch. Like, well, yeah, okay, complex
rice.
Carb. Complex carb. I'm thinking potatoes, starchy foods, rice is pure glucose, I'm basically saying things without sugar. You wouldn't have that same sort of thing because there's an insulin effect and a hormonal response to eating higher carbohydrates in sugar and fructose like sodas and crap like that that are going to lead to obesity. We aren't getting pure 275 grams of carbohydrates in good forms. We're getting them in processed sugar form leading to, just storage. Your body's really good at dealing with glucose. It doesn't really like to store pure glucose. So if you eat pure glucose, you aren't really going to going to gain a lot of fat. And this is exactly the example in super high rice concentrated diets in the Asian culture. It's pure glucose. They don't have any sugar associated with it. And that's a hormonal issue, which we'll talk about. But okay, so obesity, a public health crisis. Oh, no. So what do they say the number one cause of obesity is? Well, eating too many calories while not getting enough physical activity. Basic. All you have to do is just go get active. It's not the food system, guys. It's not anything to do with the food system. It's just going to be the fact that you're not exercising enough.
Do you think there's a level of activity that exists that would compensate for the amount of carbohydrates that they want you to consume?
Correct. So with the amount of carbohydrates that they want you to consume, they want you to do 1 to 2 hours of exercise a day.
Like pro athletes or something?
Yeah, I mean, which is just a solid athlete. Okay, do I even get more than 1 hour a day of cardio on average per day? Not really, probably just under. Maybe 6 hours a week of cardio. And that's with me being pretty active in a sport, too. Yes, sir.
I like this first sentence.
Oh, what's the first sentence?
Americans and Canadians are getting fatter.
Americans and Canadians are getting fatter, guys.
That's just nice.
Our friends south of the border are lean and good.
Mexicans not so much.
There's not enough. The asterisk says there's not enough statistical information on the Mexican culture to right now.
Pick and choose the right battle there, I guess.
Yeah, but yes, according to this, Americans and Canadians are getting more overweight and. Well, that's because people are eating too many calories and not exercising enough. That means because they are choosing to have a less active lifestyle due to homework, school, and other stuff. And their genetics. Heredity plays a large role in determining how susceptible people are to being overweight and obese. And then their genes, you know, they influence how one burns calories and stores fat. It's genes. It's the genes.
Genes.
Okay. So these factors are what are leading to the obesity epidemic. Anybody ever heard of the obesity epidemic?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 33% of the nation is considered obese, which is obese on a BMI scale, means you are 25 to 35 pounds overweight. That's what they say. And not this type of overweight. So then they say, well, now we gotta apply the scientific process to nutrition. We gotta study nutrition. We gotta find out why people are getting fat. Well, what's the best way to do that?
Ask.
Well, no, we should
monitor.
We need to, yeah, maybe monitor some people, but how can you monitor people and guarantee that they're eating?
Assessments.
That's tough. I don't think we're allowed to.
So the best way to study nutrition, I'll give you the best case scenario, is to lock people in a space, feed them only food that you want them to eat, and then monitor their health.
Prison.
Prison.
They do leave jacked, some of them.
Prison, okay, we'll just say prison. Okay, or maybe a mental health institution where people are locked in a room. Is it ethical to lock anyone in a room and feed them only certain foods?
No, not in the U.S.
Not in the U.S. Miguel's like, I know some places.
What the hell
do
you want?
Okay, no, it's not very ethical. So is that going to be very possible to lock people in a room and feed them specific foods and see how they respond to them without any other factors getting in the way? What's going to get in the way if you don't lock someone in the room?
Life
is going to get in the way. Yeah, what happens in life?
Variables.
Free will. What other variables might get in?
Cultural.
Party.
All the ones we talked about. Remember?
All the ones we talked about. Social pressure to eat foods, drinking alcohol, exercising or not exercising, the ability to stick to a diet, even. Like, is someone 100% guaranteed to eat only the foods that you tell them to? No. Even I. 100% of the food that I tell myself to eat, I still eat something bad every once in a while, right? And I'm pretty good, too. So, What's the best way that we can study nutrition? Well, according to the science-backed institutions, we need to do epidemiological studies, because what we can do is hit hundreds of thousands of people in a simple, easy-to-monitor way and get an idea of what their basic health is. Okay, so let's go over what an epidemiological study is. An epidemiological study, does anybody know what that is?
Huge study.
A massive study that gets hundreds of thousands of people. And what does it do?
Provides compares the relationships.
Okay, provides information about specific relationships to certain, maybe disease to food, or age to disease, or age to weight, or anything like that. Okay. Yeah, just try to create relationships between items. For instance, let me give you an example of an epidemiological study. About 4 years ago, 3 years ago, the LA Times posted on the front page of their the newspaper, red meat increases your increases your risk of all cause mortality or of death by 33%. Front page of the LA Times 4 years ago, I forget which day. This massive statement: if you eat red meat, you will die. You're 33% more likely to die.
I mean, die early.
Just die of heart disease, or die of cancer, die of just all-cause mortality. They just said death in general. Earlier, or something, before the age of 55, I don't know. And so they post this, and they say, due to a recent epidemiological study based out of this group, 33%, or you're 33% more likely to die if you eat red meat. Okay. Then it goes into all the way that they conducted it. And it turns out they sent a survey to 200,000 people in the nation and asked these people, here's a survey: what did you eat over the last year?
Oh my God.
No, seriously, this is dead serious. And then it goes, how many times per week did you eat vegetables? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, 10 plus something, whatever. Yeah. How many times per week did you eat fruits? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10 plus. How many times per week did you eat red meat? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 plus. And then under red meat, it has asterisk. Red meat is defined as hamburgers, cheeseburgers, hot dogs, tacos, meat tacos, pizza. Then it goes steak. Lamb.
That's going to be skewed super high.
So if you're telling me how many times a week did I eat pizza, and you're counting that as red meat because it had a little piece of pepperoni on it, you're telling me that you include that in red meat? Well, that's what this epidemiological study did. And so the people that eat hamburgers, cheeseburgers, and pizza, are they more likely to die? Duh. Okay?
Duh.
I mean, but yet, what does this epidemiological study do? It says, steaks will kill you. Red meat.
Just said pizza and hamburgers.
Pizza, hamburgers, hot dogs, crap processed food will kill you. Yes, everybody knows that. Okay? But yet, on the front page of the LA Times, they were able to say, red meat will kill you 33% faster. So that's what epidemiology is. It's trying to relate certain lifestyle habits to certain disease, typically. Or relate certain disease to certain lifestyle habits. So it goes to all the people that have cancer. Hey, all the people that have cancer, what did you eat over the last year? How many times did you have this? 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 Oh, look, the people that it turns out, compared to normal population, people that had cancer ate more red meat. That means red meat causes cancer. They're determining causative effects that slightly correlate to each other. It's like red meat causes cancer. That's the type of statements that they're able to say using epidemiology. Guess what? Every piece of nutritional advice that you have gotten from childhood has been based on an epidemiological study. Does that make you super excited to eat what's recommended?
No.
I'm just saying. Okay, so epidemiological studies, it's going to get you a little bit into that. There's animal studies that have been done based off certain foods, and it's animal cruelty sort of stuff. But feed rice to chickens and determine if it's bad. Feed this to animals, you know, blah, blah, blah. Feed this to monkeys, see what happens, and then do some basic results off that. Not too many of those are done. They used to be done a lot more often because animal rights activists were not as popular back then. Then you have cell culture studies. So basically, like, on a cellular level, feeding cells specific types of food and then determining the health of the cell might be a little bit more believable, in my opinion. But how does, like, certain nutrigenomics affect cellular processes? Okay, meaning, does a cell function optimally if it has this type of food versus this type of food, or glucose in this form versus fat in this form? You know, and it does stuff in that sense. And then human studies, you can have a case-controlled study in which you're trying to get someone to eat a certain way, but you can't guarantee 100% that they ate a specific way, or exercised, or didn't exercise. So it's really easy for them to say, and the epidemiological studies around exercise matter too. But the fitness people that are like, I exercise once or twice a week. Or, you know, let's say they give an epidemiological study to exercise and health. Okay? Exercise and health. How many times per week do you exercise? 1 to 2. Or 0 to 1. 1 to 2. 3 to 4. 5 to 6. The people that check the 5 to 6 box have less risk for disease. Do the people that... Does that guarantee that fitness then prevents disease? Doesn't guarantee anything. Because people that typically exercise often, more often, do they typically eat better too?
Yeah.
People that care about their health, do they exercise and eat well?
Yes.
So how can you correlate or create any causation based off of that sort of epidemiological study? But they still try to. Okay. All right. What else? So placebo effect. Placebo effect, super simple. They just talk about how, this is moving on to page 21. Placebo effect is basically saying that you are taking something that's active and going to help you. And it's nothing, it's a sugar pill or something. Okay. So your mind has the effect that, or has the thought that you're getting better or getting healthy, and you actually get better and healthy. Kind of crazy. See, maybe you've heard of the placebo effect?
Yeah,
you can read a little bit more about that if you want. From research study to headline, this is like kind of what I was talking about with the Los Angeles Times article. How does it go? So it goes from for page 23. We'll look at figure 1.2, sifting facts and fallacies. So this is how it goes. It goes from primary sources, so a journalist is going to write something. Okay, then it goes to secondary sources, scientific magazines, articles based with primary source material and written by specialists. And then the scientists and science writing, you have generalists and magazines and newspapers that create articles written by science writers, and then the mass media. So it does have to go through a few steps before it can get published in mass media to prove that it's got scientific backing, and those are the steps that it has to go through. So basically, if it gets to the media, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's 100% true, but it has been tested enough to where they can see it might have some scientific backing, more or less. That makes sense? But that doesn't mean you should trust anything. All right. Page 25, complete study questions 1 through 9 is your homework. And any questions as we finish up chapter 1?